Golf Smarter, number 638, is brought to you by Peter Millar Golf. Stay tuned to hear how you can get complimentary shipping and a free golf cap at petermillar.com/golfsmarter. That's M-I-L-L-A-R, petermillar.com/golfsmarter. Your golf swing will improve when you stop thinking about it with Josh Zander.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Josh.
Hello, Fred. How are you?
I've been doing well. How is your spring shaping up?
It's busy. The weather has gotten better. We're past most of the rains, and it's, you know, April, Masters, you know, it's when things start, and people get really into golf. They put the skis away, and so it's, let's put it this way, it's been really busy.
Isn't it amazing how the Masters is like the Super Bowl of golf, and it kicks off the season?
It's awesome.
It's kind of like awesome. The Daytona 500 in NASCAR, right?
It's so cool. I mean, yeah. It's just the coolest tournament to watch. So many great shots have been hit through the years. I mean, great players. Always fun. Back nine. I had a chance to play there a few years ago, and I got to relive a lot of those shots that all my heroes got to play. And it's like, oh my God, this is where Seve did this. This is where Jack did this. This is where Watson. It's just like you're just walking through history. It's just an amazing, amazing place and an amazing experience.
Quite a museum.
Yeah.
Were you intimidated by it?
No, I was like a kid in a candy store. I got to say, I got into that golf shop, and I probably need to take a second mortgage out of my house and out of things that I bought. I have my Augusta mug that I drink my coffee in every morning, and it's funny. I had to really say, okay, Josh, it's time to stop. This is starting to get a little bit out of control. So, but no, the place is amazing. The people there are so cool. The food's amazing. The golf course is beyond incredible. I mean, I had been there as a spectator before, but to play it and to experience it, it's definitely a bucket list item, and I'm fortunate to have had that opportunity.
What was your biggest surprise about the golf course after seeing it so many years on TV and then being there?
I don't know if I was surprised, but just amazed at how contoured the greens are. I mean, like they always say, TV doesn't do justice to the contours. I mean, a green like 14, it's just unbelievable. If you get on the wrong side of the hole, it's just so hard to get the ball up and down or even close when you're putting. So I remember one time Tiger came back to Stanford, and he made this comment to spending some time with the team. And he said, you know, nobody can beat me at Augusta if I don't three putt. And basically what he's saying is, I know where to put it on those greens. I'm not going to get myself out of position. And I may not be shooting at certain pins because it's not smart. If I end up, you know, short-sighting myself, I know it's a bogey or worse. So if I can be good at lag putting by putting my ball in the right position and I don't three putt, I'm going to, you know, take advantage of the par fives, and I know how to play that course, and there's nobody who's going to beat me. And I totally get it, especially when you get there. You just cannot miss on the wrong side, or that course can make you look real foolish. But if you get the ball in the right positions, you can use those contours to your advantage, and that's why you see some of those amazing rounds like what Jordan Spieth did on Sunday this past Masters, and just some of those great back nines you see, because if you know how to play the course and you're executing, you can really take advantage of it.
Fascinating. That's so interesting. What is your association with Stanford?
My association with Stanford as well. I went there as a student okay. back in the late 80s.
Okay.
And so played on the golf team there, and I have been teaching there since 2000.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, obviously you're a successful golf instructor, because you mentioned, we've learned that you are in California, you're a golf instructor, and you have a mortgage. You revealed a lot in that little moment.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, you assumed I had a mortgage, but you know,
you said I would have.
I'll let you.
You said,
yeah, exactly.
When you were shopping at Augusta,
I had
to get a second
you.
Mortgage.
That's right. That's right. You got me.
Okay.
I was listening to the radio the other day, and there was a clever ad campaign where it said, this house will cost you 25 years of really hard work. This house will cost you 23 years of really hard work. And it's just like, that's what it is in the Bay Area. You're going to, you know, if you're fortunate enough to buy a house, it's right. You know, it's a lot of years of hard work to pay that thing off. But luckily for me, my work is fun. So I enjoy every half hour I'm with somebody and helping them with their game. It's awesome.
Yeah, I can't even imagine the concept of paying it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Different podcast. Okay, right. So actually, I want to, you know, I have the driving range that I use for practice is actually a par three course here in Marin County. And I go there primarily just to use the driving range so I can practice, which I don't get to do a lot. So most of the time when I'm going to hit balls on a range, it's to warm up before a round. But one of the things that I find, especially at a par three course like that, is you get a lot of people who are new to the game, who've not taken lessons, they're teaching themselves, they've watched on TV or they played a video game and now all of a sudden they're playing golf. And then I start, you know, and I get into conversations with people, and then we get over to the putting area, the practice putting area, and the conversation turns to, and I love to do this with people who are new to the game, is distance and direction. Mm-hmm. And I'm just starting to realize, so distance and direction on the green is, and maybe I'm wrong, so that's why I want to ask, distance and direction on the course versus distance and direction on the green.
Distance and direction on the practice green versus the actual greens?
When you're putting, you know, what is the first thing you want to do, or what's your most important element? Is it distance or direction? Yeah. And then on the golf course, what's more important, distance or direction? Are they opposite or the same? I kind of see them differently.
Well, let me take putting first.
Please.
Obviously, the answers are both important.
Of course.
Direction becomes more important on the shorter putts. Distance becomes more important on the longer putts. So if I'm trying to hit a 4-footer, distance control is not that difficult, relatively speaking. But to get, you know, to hit a ball straight enough to get into a 4-foot hole, I mean, a 4-foot putt, which is only a 4.25-inch hole, that's a challenging thing. So working on drills that help you square up the putter face, because the putter face is basically what controls the direction of the putt. It's, you know, people have all these, you know, path training aids, but really the putter face is what's the key to rolling a ball online. So direction becomes very important on those short putts. Once you get outside of like, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Direction is on the shorter putts or the longer putts?
Shorter putts.
Okay.
Shorter putts, direction is more important. Apologize if I misspoke there. Yeah. Shorter putts, it's direction control is huge. Distance control is not as big of an issue because it's just not as tough a skill to roll a ball 4 feet. You know, people aren't hitting it 20 feet when they're trying to roll it 4, but when they're trying to roll it 30, sometimes they roll it 40.
Yeah, have to hit it 4, how often do we hit it 3?
Yeah, that's...
I mean,
that's,
we're talking about true. Amateur golf here, my friend. I know that you're playing Augusta. We did not.
But I think most people miss their 3- and 4-footers because they have a direction control problem rather than a distance control problem. Okay. At least that's been my experience.
Yep.
But people definitely have issues controlling their distance on longer putts. And for me, it's in both cases, it's a matter of like, how do you train for that? Yesterday, I was given a putting lesson, and the guy's like, I really have a tough time with my distance control. So I gave him some distance control drills. The other guy said, hey, I'm missing short putts. And we worked a lot on face control to try to get him. So there's an example of like, hey, you're trying to make those short ones. You got to get the ball in line. I don't care how good your distance control is. If you can't start your ball in line, you're not going to make your short putts. And then when it comes to the longer putts, distance control becomes much more important because the 3 putts happen more because of, you know, hitting the ball the wrong distance than they do by hitting it the wrong direction. So that's how I look at it. When it comes to the golf course, I think direction control is overrated when it comes to hitting like a 5-iron, 7-iron, an 8-iron into a green. People oftentimes think of missing their direction control left and right as being the big issue. I find, you know, teaching all these years that people mishit the ball and they don't get the right distance control. Tiger is always talked about trying to get the ball pin high. Well, pin high means that you got to hit the ball solidly to hit it the appropriate distance, whatever that distance is for you. So when you're trying to hit a shot, let's say for me, an 8-iron is like a 155-yard shot. So if I'm trying to hit the ball 155 yards, I need to hit my 8-iron solidly. If I miss hit it, it's not going to go that distance. So I'm not so concerned, do I miss 10 yards left or 10 yards right? I will account for that with where I aim, but I'm more interested in, hey, can I hit the ball solidly so it gets me the right distance? And so if you think about accuracy is how far are you from the hole after you hit a shot? Oftentimes it's because you're short or long more than it is left and right. I'm not saying that direction's not important. I don't want to be misquoted there. They're both important, but hitting the ball solidly is the key. And if you can get the ball pin high, then you have a good chance of getting down in two or less from there. If you don't, if you hit it short or long, we have more problems. So there's something that your listeners may look into, and maybe you've had them on your show already, I'm blanking on his name right now, but the guy who does the decade approach, which is Scott Fawcett's his name. So Scott's really good at letting you know, hey, here are the actual scores tour players make from each one of these distances. So I think it's at about 165 yards that tour player averages about 3 to get into the hole. So what's an amateur doing shooting at a pin that's tucked behind, you know, a bunker at 165 yards? It just doesn't make sense. You shouldn't be even aiming there anyway, but you do want to hit the ball solid. And if you can get the ball, you know, within 30 feet or so, then you got a good chance of getting it, you know, making your 3. And if you can do that, you're tying the best players in the world from that distance. So I do a lot of strategy work with my students and helping them understand where they should be aiming their approach shots. So the pin may be tucked on the left side of the green, and left of the green is a big gaping bunker. It's like, well, from 150 yards, should you be aiming at that pin? Probably not. Because if you think about even hitting the ball solidly, there's going to be a dispersion pattern. And you want to basically take that dispersion pattern and move it away from where the trouble is. So I'd rather have a 40-foot putt then try to go into a tucked left pin and end up maybe burying it in the left bunker and having no chance of getting it up and down and making doubles. So understanding, hey, I need to hit the ball solidly to get the right distance, and then I need to aim appropriately to where my dispersion pattern keeps me in a safe place. And one of the things that Scott Fawcett talks about is, stop trying to make birdies. Stop trying to go after pins, because what's going to happen is oftentimes you're going after pins you shouldn't go after and you make doubles instead. If you hit it at the appropriate place on the green and account for your dispersion pattern, part of that dispersion is going to end up near the hole, and those are your birdies. You're probably going to get close enough that you're going to make your par, and at worst, you're going to make a bogey, but you take the big numbers off the scorecard. And that's a way that I can really help people play better without even touching their swing. Just helping them understand, hey, this is the appropriate place to aim, not at the pin. One of my best golf experiences was the course Stone Tree in Novato. The guy who developed it. Yeah. Some people don't like that course, but
it's actually a love hate relationship around here for that course, and I'm on the hate side.
You're on the hate side?
Yeah.
So the reason I bring it up is, I believe his name is Bill Bunce, who was the developer there. He said, he was an acquaintance of mine. He said, hey, we're about to open this course. Do you want to come out and play? It's like 2 or 3 days before they open the course. He goes, we have holes, but we don't have flags, but you can come out and play. So I got a buddy of mine. We went out and played 18 holes without single flag stick. Wow. And we both played great because we're just going at middle of greens.
Oh.
We're trying to hit it at those corners and you know, tuck pins. So it was kind of almost a relief to just say, hey, you know, I'm gonna hit it the middle. And sometimes the pin was pretty much in the middle, and sometimes it was in the corners. But hey, if you're in the middle of a green, you're no more than 30 feet away from any pin location. And if, again, I always go back to tour player stats, I know we're not all as good as tour players at putting, but tour players average 2.0 from 32 feet. Inside of that, they actually average, you know, 1.9, 1.8, all the way down to 1.5 from 8 feet. So, hey, if I can hit the ball pin high somewhere on the green within 30 feet, and I'm a pretty good lag putter, like Tiger was saying at Augusta, hey, I can be pretty good.
Josh, if you don't mind, hang on just a second, because this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Peter Millar Golf. Now, my father had a men's clothing store with his brothers, so style has always been in my DNA, but comfort is so much of a priority for me. That's why I was so excited and honored to be contacted by Peter Millar Golf about sponsoring some episodes of Golf Smarter. So after they contacted me and we had our initial conversation, I immediately went into my closet to see not just if, but how many Peter Millar golf shirts I owned. It was no surprise that my favorite shirts are all Peter Millar golf shirts. Now, founded in 2001, Peter Millar started with just a single cashmere sweater, and they have grown into a premium American lifestyle brand featuring a wide range of casual sportswear, tailored menswear, and luxury performance golf apparel. Note that I said performance golf apparel. I've talked about how I work from home, so again, comfort is my priority. I generally wear golf shirts and shorts about 8 months of the year. And the other 4 months, I wear long pants, but I'm still wearing golf shirts. Well, Peter Millar's comfort, fit, quality, and style have set the standard in menswear and in my closet. Now, it's a new season, and you're in need of some comfortable, stylish clothes that are practical, affordable, and turn heads. I want you to head over to petermillar.com/golfsmarter and check out some of my Peter Millar favorites. Be sure to use this link, which will also be in today's show notes. So that way, when you go to petermillar.com/golfsmarter, you're going to receive complimentary shipping and a free golf hat valued at $30. Pretty good deal, but you got to take advantage of it. That's petermillar.com/golfsmarter. Millar is M-I-L-L-A-R. petermillar.com/golfsmarter to get complimentary shipping and a free golf hat delivered to your front door. When you talked about the wrong side of the hole, I think amateurs, well, I'm going to speak for myself. Mm-hmm. I just want to get it to the green. I mean, I would love mm-hmm. to focus on the pin. I would love to focus, but my direction is not always spot on, nor is my mm-hmm. distance. So the one thing me immediately is club up.
Yes.
Take an extra club, because even mm-hmm. if the distance reads something, I don't know, is that my carry or is that my, you know,
right.
the full distance there?
Well, are you taking into account the conditions too? It's like, is it uphill? Is it downhill? Is the wind with me? Is the wind against me? Is it cold? Is it warm? I mean, all that data that I call it doing the math before you hit a shot, are you taking all that into account before you even make your club selection? And then like you're saying, you know, a lot of people like, well, they go with the yardage. They hit their best 7-iron 150 one time, and then they're like, okay, that's gonna, so it's 150, it's my 7-iron.
Yeah.
Well, if you actually took your stats and you charted your round, you would see how many times you end up short of the hole and not end up long of the hole, you know, beyond the hole. So you gotta be realistic. You're not always going to hit your best shot. So, we'd like to be able to hit our best shot every time. It just doesn't happen. So we often come up short. And by the way, right-handed players come up more short when they go right. They go long when they go left, because the face is more closed when they go left. It's the reason why, speaking of Augusta National, why the 12th hole is so hard, because short right and long left are trouble on that hole.
Mm.
And guess who plays that hole real well? Mike Weir and Phil Mickelson.
Big
surprise.
Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So understanding the architecture of the hole. Okay, now I'm a right-handed player. This green has trouble short right and trouble long left. That's a tough hole for a right-handed player, because your misses are penalized, right? If you have a hole where short right and long left are safe, then it's great. Bad for a lefty, good for a righty. So just understanding courses in that respect just kind of gives you a leg up on scoring as well. Knowing where to miss is really important.
Course knowledge is really important. So what happens on a new course when you've never played before?
Well, you know, here's an interesting thing. This comes from Wally Goodwin, my old golf coach at Stanford. Because oftentimes, you know, we'd go to a tournament and we wouldn't have time to play a practice round. Not oftentimes, but sometimes that happened. And he would say, and I agree with this, and this goes a little bit against what we were just talking about, but short of the green's better than long. If you airmail a green, that's where double and triple bogeys happen. It's kind of like when you're in the front bunker and you scull it over the green.
Sure.
It's never good over the green. Think about what happens over a green. The best case scenario is you're chipping downhill.
Right?
Because greens are designed back to front. They're higher in the back, lower in the front in general to receive the shot. And then there's usually a cart path behind the green, or there's some bushes, or, you know, it goes downhill to the next tee box. I mean, over the green is oftentimes death. So he said, hey, if you're not sure, just get yourself somewhere up in the front of the green or short of the green where you're chipping uphill or hitting a bunker shot uphill. At least we know you can make pars and bogeys and you're not going to make big numbers from there. If you're unsure about a golf course, it's probably better to be a little short. And I actually agree with that. Now, most people don't hit it as far as they think they do, so they're going to end up short most of the time anyway. But that goes back to understanding your game, and that's pretty important. For some reason, I think I've talked about this before, for some reason everybody thinks you hit their 7-iron 150 yards. And it's just not true. Some people hit their 7-iron 130 yards. And then understanding, hey, these days there's so many devices that help you track that you should kind of know how far you hit the golf ball and take ego out of it. Would you rather shoot an 83 instead of a 92? I mean, just if you have to hit your 6-iron to get 150, hit your 6-iron to get 150. Where's the ego? These days, gosh, the golf clubs are so de-lofted anyway. Your 6-iron is what a 4-iron used to be back when I grew up playing golf. So no wonder there's no 2 and 3 irons anymore, because your 4-iron is what used to be a 2-iron. So, wow. And most people should be hitting hybrids anyway, but that's maybe another conversation. We can go down that road if you want.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. Exactly. Yeah. So just go for the center of the green, is what you're saying, that we should just stop pin seeking and...
Well, go for the center of the green or go for the fat side of the green. I'll give you an example. The fat side, right? So, again, Scott Fawcett's figured out that, I think it was Tiger's best 6 years on tour. He's kind of a math geek, so he went through every single shot on ShotLink and found out that Tiger's ball ended up on the fat side of the green 72% of the time. So for the viewer or for your listeners, fat side means the side of the green where there's more green. The short side of the green is if the pin's on the left and it's tucked near the left fringe, the left side of the green would be the short side. And the right side of the green would be the fat side. And sometimes if the pin's up in front, the fat side of the green is beyond the pin. Short of that pin is the short side of the green. So you don't want to short side yourself. It makes short game shots very difficult, and it makes potentially really high scores. So you want to give yourself a chance to get it up and down. Pars are good, depending on your skill level. Maybe bogeys are good. Double bogeys are good. Maybe if you're a junior golfer and you can't get to the green in regulation, whatever it is, whatever your personal par is, just fat side's better than short side. And we're so allured by that flagstick. And what I talk to my students about is, hey, why don't we make another target on the green more entertaining than the flag? Maybe it's a friend of yours with a big catcher's mitt, you know, on the fat side of the green saying, dude, hit it here, right? Or somebody doing jumping jacks or some person in, I don't know, whatever, make it like a bullseye or something, but something that entertains your brain I remember Jack Nicklaus saying, I like to make an aggressive swing to a conservative target. He's ahead of his time with his thinking, because that's exactly what great golfers do. They don't go for sucker pins. Johnny Miller calls them red light, yellow light, and green light pins. Mm-hmm. You can always go for a green light pin. That would be a pin that doesn't have any trouble around it. You can go for a yellow light pin when you're maybe on that day. Like, hey, man, I'm hitting it great. I can be a little bit more aggressive. And then you never, ever, ever, I don't care how well you're playing, go for a red light pin. Mm-hmm. Don't go for the pin on the right side of the green on number 12 at Augusta National. It's just stupid, Jordan Spieth. It's just stupid.
Nothing personal.
He knows it. He knows it. But you know what, golf? You know those great players are like, yeah, I'm good enough to do that. Ooh, you miss it just by a hair. And it's a double bogey. At best, could be worse. Could be a seven.
Yeah, I don't see professional golfers, professional athletes holding back. I don't see them instituting a personal mental game. It's like going for it no matter what, all the time.
I don't agree with that statement.
Oh, please. I love that. Keep going.
I think the great ones are willing to be conservative when it's called for.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they know that you're playing a 72-hole tournament and you try to be a hero too many times, it's too hard to make up for double bogey. Just to give you an example, I keep using Scott Fawcett stuff. I think he's ahead of the curve when it comes to strategy. He's probably the best strategist out there right now.
Definitely look him up.
Yeah, so look him up. Maybe have him on your show.
Yeah. How do you spell his last name? Do you know?
I think it's just the same as Farrah Fawcett.
F-A-W-C-E-T-T.
It's not as good looking. No offense, yeah. Scott.
I'll tell him you said that.
I'm dating myself. For your younger viewers, maybe you don't even know who that is. Look it up on the internet.
Anyway, let me see. Yeah, you probably have the poster on your wall.
Let me give you this example.
He's a
let
teenager.
Me give you this example. I don't want to get involved in the Me Too movement here on this podcast. Okay, so let me give you this example. So here's the scoring average from the fairway from 100 yards for the PGA Tour is 2.75. Excuse me, from 80 yards. Is 2.75 score, right? So if you had a par three that was 80 yards, tour players would average 0.25 under par.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You with me? Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let's say you go for a pin on the first hole you shouldn't go for. You bury it in the bunker and you make a double. All right. So you've just lost two strokes to the field. Mm. Now, let's say the next eight holes were 480-yard par fours, which is not unusual for the PGA Tour. It's probably what an average par four these days, 480 yards. You would have to hit the next eight drives 400 yards down the middle of the fairway in order just to get back to even.
Mm.
That's how bad a double is. Wow. So that's why I disagree with that comment, because if you make double, you can't make enough birdies to make it up. It's really hard if you look at the numbers. I mean, when you do the math, you realize, what am I thinking doing that? It's just not the right play. And then there you go back to Nicklaus, the best ever, says, I'm going to hit an aggressive shot to a conservative target.
Aggressive.
Now, let me ask you this, Fred. When you get on a hole and you see the fairway, do you try to hit it down the middle of the fairway?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's think about this. How far do you hit your driver?
Let's go 250.
250. Okay. So I'm going to say, I've never seen you play, but I'm going to say that if I got you out on my track, man, and we hit 100 drives and you're averaging 250, I'm going to say from your most left drive to your most right drive is probably about 70 yards, right? If we drew a dispersion pattern around it.
Right.
Now, I can't account for snap hooks and push slices that are off the world, but let's just say the majority are in this dispersion pattern that's 70 yards wide.
Okay.
Let's say you're playing a hole with out of bounds on the left. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you hit it down the middle and you hit it 30 yards left, you're out of bounds. That's within your dispersion pattern. So you've just brought a percentage of your shots into a two-shot penalty situation or shot and distance or stroke and distance. So you're going to hit three off the tee. Mm-hmm. What you need to do, if it's a 70-yard dispersion pattern, is you need to aim your ball 35 yards to the right of that out-of-bounds stake on the left side of the golf course. So your leftmost shot does not get to the out-of-bounds. So that might mean aiming at the right edge of the fairway, maybe even in the right rough. That's the smart play, not hitting it down the middle. Because you hit it down the middle, you're bringing two-stroke penalty into play.
Interesting.
Right.
Yep.
So that's some of the stuff I do during playing lessons. I get up on the tee. Okay, where are we aiming here? I kind of know what their dispersion pattern is. I'll aim right down the middle. Like, well, no, we're not doing that. If you're here to learn something, we're going to aim this one into the edge of the right rough.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. And now that doesn't mean, now think about it. If you aimed right where the rough meets the fairway on the right hand side, and you drew a line right down the middle of your dispersion pattern, that's where your dead straight shot goes. Your dead straight shot goes on the right side of the fairway, and all the ones on your dispersion pattern that are left of that are all in the fairway. The ones to the right are in the rough, maybe even in the trees, but we've taken out of bounds, out of play. Now, you can still score from rough, and it depends if you're playing U.S. Open or if you're playing, you know, your regular golf course where the rough may not be that bad, right? Now, if you have trouble on both sides, then we need to club back because we need a dispersion pattern that's narrower than your 70 yards. So that's when you start making different decisions off the tee. Like, oh, I better go back to my 3-wood, or I better go back to my hybrid or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So just imagine if tomorrow you went out and played, Fred, and you were armed with that information. You'd start aiming your driver in different places. You'd be in play more often. You start hitting to the fat side of the green. You start making less doubles because you weren't trying to be aggressive when you shouldn't. You're already a better player. Mm. Without me ever seeing your golf swing, you just saved yourself a lot of money. You don't have to take lessons, or you can take lessons to make yourself, you know, more skilled, but you're gonna get better just by being a better decision maker, which is kind of cool.
And I thought you meant I saved a lot of money because of the amount of rounds that I won.
Or maybe I've saved you money on golf balls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a win-win-win.
Are you an advocate of target golf?
Target golf, like playing in the desert kind of target golf?
Oh, no. I mean, for your shot. It's like picking a target in your distance, locking it in your head, and just focusing on that in your mind other than target-oriented golf, I should say.
You're kind of moving me towards more of like, hey, what's going on inside somebody's head? That is so visualization is a sensory way to play golf. Mm-hmm. And whenever you're sensory, you're in the present, so that's a great way to play. You do not want to play thinking about how to swing a golf club. That just, if it worked, we'd see a lot better golfers out there. It just, that's not how we perform. So sensory is one, a visual is one option, like picturing the target in your head. That's one of many options. That's a Jason Day type thing. Nicholas played that way too. He called it going to the movies. He always saw the shot before he hit it. Some people like to feel it. Some people like to hear it. But if you're sensory, literally, if you can see it, feel it, hear it, and you're in that mode when you're actually hitting the shot, it's much, much better. You're basically, I call it being in a performance state versus being in a basically inhibiting performance. You think about what's going on at the top of your backswing, you're in trouble. Now, if it's a sensation, like, ooh, I want to feel like I've got, you know, maybe 80% tempo, and so I've got a smooth transition, that feeling, and you're in touch with that feeling, great. So I don't know if you want me to continue down this road.
I know.
Talked about
on the next one. We will on the next time we get together. Sure. We will. But sure. One of the things that you said early on that I definitely wanted to come back to is when you were saying how do you train, and then you said you give some distance control drills. Thank you. Can you? I would love a distance control drill.
Sure,
please.
So a real simple one. Most people go to the golf course with three. You know, pull out three balls when they go putt. So I'll take a ball and I'll put one 10 feet from the fringe, 20 feet from the fringe, and 30 feet from the fringe, and just try to roll my ball and have it stop where the green meets the fringe. I'll do that uphill and I'll do that downhill. That's a real quick and dirty one just to get the feel of the speed of the greens. You're taking the target, the hole out of play, and you're just really focusing on rolling the ball the proper distance. I would also say I've got many, many more drills that we can do on distance control, but here's maybe, and I think you can look those up, and I mean, there's a ton of them. It's almost like you can't go wrong. There's so many good ones out there, but here's what I would say. Most people, when they make their practice stroke, are looking at the ground and they're kind of watching their putter. And that to me makes no sense. The best players are always looking at the hole when they're making their practice strokes. They're literally letting their brain get the information about how far away the hole is. It's kind of like, I equate it to like playing catch with somebody. If I'm playing catch with somebody, the reason I don't throw it way over their head or short of them is because I'm looking at them. And so my brain's figured out the effort level needed to get that ball to them or hit them, you know, what I call hitting them in the numbers, right? So that's a matter of reacting to what your visual input is giving you. So your brain can go, oh, I know how hard to hit this ball, right? And a lot of people are sitting there making their practice strokes looking at the ground, and I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, and the other thing is that they're looking at their stroke, and what are their eyes doing? Their eyes are watching the putter go back and through, trying to figure out, hey, is this correct? Or does this stroke look like it's going straight back and straight through? Whatever you're trying to do with your stroke is like, wait a second, what's going on here? This has nothing to do with the hole. You're making these beautiful strokes that don't have any relation to, you know, sometimes I'll videotape the stroke and say, does this look like a stroke that could have gotten you to the hole? And they're like, no way. Or that would be way too big. I'm like, well, your brain had no idea how hard to hit it because you weren't looking at the hole. The hole's always a different distance away from you, so you need to be able to get that information. So that's a huge one. Mm-hmm. And Butch Harmon once said, you know, great players glare at the hole and glance at the ball, and weekend players glare at the ball and glance at the hole. Mm. And that's always stuck with me because that's exactly right. And one of the things about golf is the ball's just sitting there waiting for us to hit. It's not a reactive sport, right? Well, my son's playing basketball. It's like you're always a different place on the floor when you're shooting, or most of the time you are, whether you like it or not. And the reason, you know, you shoot well is because your eyes are locked on that, on the rim, not sitting there looking at your hands. And anyway, it's a pet peeve of mine. Maybe you hear it in my voice, but I'm like, would you please look at the hole? And here's I would say another thing when I talk about distance control. Here's my formula for distance control, whether it's putting and even more importantly in short game. Solid contact and pay attention. So if you can make, let's say chipping, if you can make solid contact with the chip, right? So you're not chunking or sculling. Okay, so that's, you've been to one of my short game clinics to talk about how to make sure that doesn't happen. But if we can get rid of chunking and sculling and we can make solid contact, then distance control really is a matter of paying attention to how far away the hole is. I think it's really that simple.
Oh my gosh.
Last thing I want is make perfect contact and hit the ball 10 feet past the hole. Even tour players miss more than they make from there. So what good was that great contact if you had no idea how far the hole was?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh my God. I just learned so much. That was, I'm telling you, that was awesome. Thank you. That was really great. But as I mentioned, you are coming back because I had a whole other topic that I was going to do as part two, but we just covered everything in the entire podcast. That was amazing.
All right.
And I have been to one of your short game clinics and there's video of it. And I got to tell you, I've been receiving some great email from people thanking me for recording your short game clinic, even as an audio podcast. People got a lot out of it. So thank you for letting me eavesdrop on you on like that.
Awesome. Anytime.
All right, Josh, xandergolf.com, correct?
xandergolf.com. That's me.
And where are you teaching? Any place specific or
Stanford
just give
golf
me a call?
Course. Stanford Golf Course is where I spend most of my time, and I'm one day a week out at Sharon Heights as well.
Okay. Josh Zander, thanks so much for joining us once again. Great to talk
to you,
man.
You're very welcome, Fred. Thank you.
This week on our Golf Smarter Academy, I'm actually really interested to hear this answer. Fred from California admits to sucking at putting even after spending a lot of money to practice more often. Maybe it's his putter. Our Academy professor, Tony Manzoni, has some advice that hopefully will help. Loser.
Hi, Tony. My name is Fred from Novato, California, and I just put a new putting green in my backyard and have been able to practice my putting, chipping, and pitching around the green. After practicing daily for a couple weeks, on my first round out, I was on the green in regulation, but then I four-putted. You can imagine the hard time my friends gave me then. I also had three more three-putts that round. Now that I've spent all this money for a putting green, what are your thoughts about getting fitted for a putter? I know how much getting fitted for clubs helped my game. Will a putter fitting help too?
Fred, I heard your question. I don't want you to be a glutton for punishment. So please don't go get your putter fitted. You don't need that. What you do need, and I'll tell you what the best teacher, Dave Stockton, ever said about putting. He says, first you have to learn the roll of the ball, the distance, the putt is. Roll the ball the distance the putt is. Secondly, decide this, how it's going to break. Trust your instincts. Roll the ball on that intended line and let the ball find the hole. Don't try to make putts, because when you do that, you add an additional set of circumstances that don't be needed to be made. Trust what your eyes tell you. And it's really important when you're standing up to a putt to be looking at the hole more than at the ball, so that you can, in a sense, memorize in your mind that distance. And then get back to the ball, one last look, and roll, and then focus on rolling the ball the distance that you perceive. And I guarantee you, you'll stop three putting. Good luck, my friend.
Clearly, there's no help for this guy, but we'd love to help you. Call our toll-free Golf Smarter Academy line at 415-761-1498 right now and leave your message. Not only will you get your answer on the podcast, you'll receive a copy of Tony's DVD, The Lost Fundamental, a Golf Smarter Academy diploma suitable for framing, and one of our Golf Smarter ball markers. For all the information on our Golf Smarter Academy, go to golfsmarter.com/academy. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, there's ways to get in touch with me, and I would love to respond to you. Use @GolfSmarter on Twitter or Instagram. Call our Academy line at 415-761-1498, or just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.